Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello! I still hate that. And welcome to the SmackDown preview with myself and Michael Sidgwick. A very special Dadley's SmackDown preview this Friday because it's a very special SmackDown, Sidge. I'm going to do away with the intro because I'm simply too excited to get to SmackDown and can't do Will Bond's bit.
I can do it.
Well, I can do one of his bits because tonight's SmackDown, Sidge, is going to be cinema. That's enough for that. We're on video, man. It's all about...
the quote, stars.
Quote WWE.com, the tribal chiefs.
I mean, that's poor.
Two-man Samoan power trip are making their return. Last time we saw them was leaving together. They were leaving Las Vegas. And now they're coming in to Salt Lake City.
What's the name of the arena?
I don't know. Let me find that out. And you talk about the two biggest stars in the game coming together.
We'll talk about the two biggest stars in the game coming together. Didn't Dwayne The Rock Johnson, which is kind of a synonym for Dwayne The Rock, yeah, which it is. Didn't he, was like, he tweeted something like, game gets changed tonight or whatever, hashtag killers in the jungle.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if that was their fucking, I'm sorry. Can you imagine if that was their fucking name? That's class.
Killers in the jungle.
Killers in the jungle.
I mean, that's Cody and Seth absolutely pinished and finished.
Isn't I mean, like Seth's pinished to begin with. He's the absolute odd man out that no one wants to be around or wrestle, realistically.
And he might win. Theoretically, he could win, right? Like he was there to be the pin eater on paper, and then it's just, well, but he could be setting Seth up to get the victory because he's got to defend the Royal title the next night.
I guess I.
The
I
mean, Rock could I get mean, beat as part of the...
There's an attendant drama in there, yeah. And that no one can really eat the pin for this presumed tag match that's going ahead on night one. Killers in the Jungle. Imagine if that was just the name of their act.
It's at the...
It's awesome. The Rock rules.
It's at the Delta Center, by the way.
The Delta?
Delta. Anything in that? Anything vulgar in that?
The Fanny Melter Center.
Life in the Fanny Melter Center in Salt Lake City. Isn't that like quite sort of... I don't know, like conservative.
I don't know.
Anyway, from Life from the Fanny Melter Center, it's the Tribal Chiefs. It is Roman Reigns and The Rock coming together for the first time. Paul Heyman effectively threatened Triple H with their arrival based on...
Can we talk about this?
Yeah, well, based on Triple H's little vanity piece that he insisted on starting SmackDown with. It was sort of like I was watching the thing back last night and The Rock almost got over on me and it's apparently 2000 because I'm not going to...
Nicholas, sorry.
Sorry, Nicholas. It's sorry me, I can't cut that.
And here's that's the thing, Nicholas is going to have to help us.
And here's the thing, Rack. I'm still mad at charge around here. He's shoot not. That's what's so funny about
this. I know.
He's shoot not. Yeah, what were your thoughts on how that whole Triple H bit played out, the stuff with Paul Heyman?
So the Triple H thing...
What's happening here? Power struggle, I guess.
Power struggle. We'll talk about this, then we'll talk about what I expect Rock and Roman to say. Triple H very much... He's more for, you know, off the field reasons, if you like. And, you know, as an on-screen whatever, I think he's more disposable than ever. We've talked at length about how we're in a new era now wherein, because there are no... It's not like this family-run business. Mm-hmm. This nepotism... I mean, nepotism exists in every single business, but it's not so much all in the family anymore, obviously, now that the only person... who's McMahon is by marriage now, there'll be no loyalty from the absolute top brass of TKO/Endeavor to Levesque if he stops getting the numbers. He is more disposable than anyone who's ever been at the helm of WWE creative yes. ever has been. So
closest to the old WWE model, isn't it?
Indeed, eh? You could get a showrunner.
Yeah.
You could get someone who had success doing something vaguely action-adventure-y with combat in it. Whoever did Arrow, I guess, for the longest. Someone in that ilk could feasibly come and replace Levesque if he doesn't get the numbers. So it was weird to see, A, it was weird to see Paul Levesque, Triple H, like assert his authority and be so sure of himself that he is, in fact, the guy in charge, when the reality, which is meant to be tapping into to make it more realistic, is as far from the truth as it's ever been.
Yeah.
So I noted that with interest. And it's just, I don't know how much I like the slant of it being another administrative power struggle. How many years have we endured that? And it's a strange pivot as well, because after experiencing that for years, after it being the primary driver of the narrative for years and years and years and years, and Vicky Guerrero and Teddy Long and Bischoff and McMahon and Mike Shane Adam Lee. And Stephanie and Adam Lee and Foley and Shane and Daniel Bryan, and it was relentless. It was the only way they knew how to tell a story, and that story only worked once in 1998.
Yeah.
Right? Now, under Triple H and Levesque, in his defense, yes, Adam Pearce like sorts out the mid-card, but it's a bit more Tunney adjacent, except he's on camera more. And realistically, that has little to do with something like the rise of Cody Rhodes. I mean, yeah. I don't think he's interacted with Pearce once, has he?
I think so.
Like, I mean, he doesn't need to be.
What's cool with all this is that he is angry.
Who? I thought you didn't know who it was.
I'm not doing it for you today. Okay, thank you. I know you don't like it.
That's just, I might think it's the best thing in the world. I'm just not involved.
And that was it. I'm just a caring guy. I lifted it from this one today.
Thank you.
Nick Aldis, within the fiction of WWE, is quite angry at the way that the Bloodline have run roughshod.
Yes.
He's answered a major
plot hole
as a character, and that's how you use authority figures, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is. But what I'm getting at really is that they don't need to exist. Five years of AEW has proven that they don't need to exist, certainly not as on-screen actors. And the point I was making as well is that the second they got away from that, mostly, at least in terms of the main event picture, like Cody can sort his own stuff out, you know, his matches get approved by whoever in the background. Like, you could tell great stories, or like really, like, not great stories, in my opinion, incredibly effective, lucrative stories great. Without that device. Look at like the Cody's individual arc is a great story. Some of the programs and the promos building up to those, like with Seth and Brock, better in the ring, I guess, than the chapters. But still, like, they've got their biggest, most universally popular top star of the 21st century. He's not as much of a star as John Cena. I'm not suggesting that, but he's more universally popular. He doesn't divide the audience. And now we're back to, via Triple H, guys, I'm in charge, and guess what? Down to my knees. So. Down to my knees, made out of plastic. I'm the boss. Don't go into business for yourself.
Rock literally did that as a bit once. It's a two of the easy big fella.
Easy big fella.
The Cody Rhodes thing is, like, when you map it from the first promo he cut when he came back on that Raw, talked about the Dusty Rhodes having the title ripped out of his hands and all that.
It's all just quite good, but really effective pro wrestling fiction.
I was going to say it's brought back. It's brought back to WWE because AEW brought it back. Ultimately, this idea that wrestlers, it should be as simple as wrestlers turn up to work with a tunnel visioned approach of winning whatever belt they're able to access. Fueds. Diversions.
They you spin are in the, off from that.
Yeah, you are on the drive.
The pursuit the still drives everything, though.
Yeah. And then...
like Punk and MGF.
Perfect example. Number one and 1A in the rankings, and something's got to give. Somebody's got to lose. And when that person wins that feud, then theoretically, there is nobody else in their path to fight
like
for the
CM
title.
Punk.
Indeed. Cody Rhodes has had these divers. There's no rankings or anything, but he's always had his eyes on the prize. And then every now and then, somebody attacks him personally or does something that is offensive to him or whatever, and that's your diversion. And two Royal Rumbles and a constant, like, the messaging of finish the story has never gone away. The mixing in, even the mixing in with Jey Uso was a little bit Bloodline adjacent because he was showing no fear from Roman Reigns. And the one tiny face-off was this fabulously acted, like, realization for Cody that this is still what hangs over all of this. And as you say, this sudden insertion of The Rock was the start of diverting that in a way, well, most unnatural, was a way like the WWE have leaned on authority figures and all that sort of stuff, and now Triple H gets in it and that gets a bit more muddled. Is it possible that tonight with the two of them, with Roman and Rock, whether or not Triple H is going to be in attendance, we don't know, like on camera, I mean, with the two of them coming together, do they bring those two things together where The Rock, like, has a bit of a dig at Triple H and says, look, I returned as well, you know, to have a match with Roman Reigns. I guess what we're going to have to do, Paul, like Mr. Bossman, is I'm going to have a match with Roman Reigns by my side, and we'll follow your rules for right now, but only because we had our Samoan heritage offended back in Vegas. And that, like, you're folding the storyline reason for The Rock right now to allow this little diversion to occur. Is that how you kind of like bring it back into the fiction?
I don't know if they care that much.
The egos are too big.
Well, it's not just that. It's just that they don't really care about plot holes as long as they do a lot of attention-grabbing diversions, yeah, which they've done an incredible job of. It doesn't have to make sense to them. When did it ever, realistically?
Feels massive because of the people involved, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I still maintain that they could have gone about it in a much better way, but what they've done is captured the imagination of people, undoubtedly. Before I quickly get to what I think Rock and Roman will specifically do, I want to talk about last week's SmackDown, which I did watch, and it just annoyed us so much, man. So you got Levesque, he's, you know, he's down to his knee, he might trip over it at some point, you know, hopefully he doesn't.
As big as his nose.
Indeed. So that he does that whole, I'm still in charge, and don't go into business for yourself. What was the Rock line he used?
It doesn't matter. Like, I don't care.
It doesn't matter. Know your role and all the rest of it. So it's 2000 again, it would seem. So he's backstage, and Bron Breakker very meekly comes up to him. My God. I still hate that. Yeah. Like, there's levels to this. Like, Bron Breakker on a Tuesday, on the dumbest show ever, yeah, in front of 150 people, comes off like a bigger star than he does on the flagship because he's like this sort of obsequious guy. He wants advice from the great papa.
Do we love bosses, don't they?
The great papa. I already hate it.
It's their value system of like how they believe like all of the world should function, and thus in their mind it's a reflection of what they think reality should be, whereas it should be an escape from
you're already seeing, like, it's not just the terrible, like, evil authority figure versus plucky babyface, which is just rendered completely ineffective by overexposure for years and years and years and years and years. Sometimes it's as bad as just seeing a wrestler just be subservient,
yeah,
to someone in a position of authority. The optics of it, even on like these really small levels, are bad. I looked at Bron Breakker and he's like, oh, the great papa. I want some advice. I've got offers from Raw. I've got an offer from SmackDown. You know, I don't know which one to go, and please, sir, can you give some advice, great papa?
My uncle spoke so highly of you.
You know what I mean? It's just, I hate it. I'm already seeing the very small scale problems with having this device at the forefront of programming, which I had to endure and have to. I did when I worked here, but I just binned it off and read more novels, quite frankly. And another thing that I hate is, so Bron Breakker comes in backstage last week. He's talking to Big Papa, the Great Papa. Great Papa. And Paul Heyman oozes into frame, right? Like that, giving it his eyes, and, you know, he's sinister. And good job, Paul, get a new face. And he basically says, "And get out of the way, yo," to Bron Breakker. "Get out of the way, you little rank and file."
Law, remember? NXT, like, he's kind of he's maybe wants to do a bit of business with him and he makes it onto the main roster because he was his one night representative on there.
I don't even remember the law. They didn't for a week remember the law of the Royal Rumble pamphlet until I had to pivot. So I don't think they're going to give half a crap about the law of some segment on NXT.
Disagree.
Anyway, so Paul goes to speak, Heyman goes to speak to Triple H. And Heyman then basically measures the temperature in the room and, you know, the vibe and the mood, and Triple H is looking pissed.
Yeah.
Looks like he's about to, he's so pissed off that it looks like he's about to kick some mid-carder in the balls and take his career alongside it.
He's so stressed, he has to go, gonna have to drop some pedigrees here.
Like, who's out there? Wade Barrett. Yeah. It's not 2010 anymore. I'll kick him in the stones. Thank you very much. And he goes, all right, I'll give it a week. Now's not the time to talk. Obviously, you're not in the best place for this. So I'll come back to you in a week, Mr. Triple H. But I must say that when I come back next week, I won't be coming along. I won't be coming alone. I'm bringing with me my tribal chief, comma Roman Reigns. Oh my God. Oh, so thank you so much for the clarification.
I agree.
Oh my God.
Shut up, man. Thank you so much for the clarification. How was I to know who you're referring to by saying my tribal chief, which itself's pretty exposition-y. You could just say, oh, he'll come.
He's worried Roman's but watching. He's scared. He wants
they to. They have to. It's like, you know what they say? They have to spell it out for you. Yeah. It's like spelling the word the. It's like it's even worse than spelling it out for you. I'll be bringing my tribal chief, Roman Reigns. Oh my God, it's the worst ever. This isn't that bad because guess what? The killers in the jungle could be like, I've got a feeling that I'm going to watch The Killers in the Jungle because it's the best name ever.
Yeah.
And just be like fawning at the feet of their megastar charisma and auras. Do we get a hint of, here's how I think it's all going to go, right? Okay, we'll talk about, you know, the elimination qualifiers or whatever subsequently. So the story here is clearly they've realized, now we need Rock and Roman to be as a unanimous a choice as possible. So let's delay that a year.
Yeah.
Let's completely retcon the story of the bloodline, where it was always hinted that The Rock was it. Is it fair to say that was the story, or did people just project that story onto the bloodline because there were rumors that The Rock wanted to work Roman at some point?
Projected it. It was, I guess, what you could have done, because Roman, it was weird with the bloodline because Roman at first
I suppose was
given the lay by the Samoans. I think it was at like Clash Champions when he first came out with like no top and
So
he was kind of endorsed as the head of the table,
the best one.
And then the power went to his head. So then people started projecting, like, if the Samoans would have known, if the forefathers would have known, they wouldn't have, like, anointed Roman the best one. Like, they need The Rock, and The Rock would one day swoop in. And well, he probably would lose, but he'd attempt to save the day and save the heritage of the, what did they call it? The Samoan blood bond that was formed at the top of that family tree. That was in people's heads, how all of this would
It's all a bit headcanon. It's all a bit headcanon. I suppose
you could get there with it.
I suppose by default as well, by calling himself the tribal chief and the head of the dynasty of which The Rock is in, that you were asked to make those connections anyway. So obviously the idea is that if they haven't retconned it, which I don't think there's much to retcon here if I'm being perfectly honest, but either way, that was going to be the idea. They were going to have the match, but it's not happening for reasons we've talked about, and we've unpicked this riddle, or tried to, quite a few times. So I think the idea is, right, we need everyone to be on board with it, otherwise we're stepping on our own dicks. So let's put together this two-man power trip, but good, killers in the jungle. Jesus. I love it, man.
Jungle Rock.
I love it.
Rock. It's R-A-W-K.
Honestly, it's as a name alone, it makes us want to go, But the idea being that they will probably fall out. They'll be like, maybe they'll start tagging each other in the WrestleMania tag match.
Yeah.
I'm getting somewhere with SmackDown.
Because it's still an ego war between these two men.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is. So maybe at WrestleMania, they'll start tagging each other in and they'll look at each other like, I'm fairly certain I've got this. I mean, it's just Seth Rollins.
They would both do that. Roman's already done it.
I know. Like,
they would both do that as a shoot.
Yeah.
No trouble.
So that's...
Did I look in bother?
And I'm assuming that at the end of night one, they'll have lost.
Yeah.
And the idea is, who's at fault? They each blame the other. It's maybe left ambiguous about whether they're going to fall out then, and then Rock can maybe interfere in night two and whatever. So what I'm saying is tonight total united front? A hint of... No, there's still some real alpha jostling for position in the top dog spot here. Or is it proper, the two coolest lads in WWE are mates and the killers in the jungle rule?
Well, I think for the best possible segment, it should be a little bit of both. However, The Rock. The Rock came back in Vegas, and I genuinely think, I'm going to give The Rock the benefit of the doubt because we spent a week kind of hating him, actually.
Oh, because Nicholas. Still real to him, damn it.
He destroyed that Cody thing for like a week, and then To give The Rock the benefit of the doubt, prior to the Cody thing, like you made this point, I think it was the Jinder promo, baby.
I don't think any of this needs Triple H, just to tie it back to the intro. Yeah.
How many times have we said that over the last 25 years?
A lot.
When The Rock came back against Jinder, I think the point you made was, like, a lot of it was rubbish. He looked blown up, cutting his own promo, but there's that magic, there's that spark where you're just like, all right, you can have this one again.
Yeah.
I'll give you that free pass. I remember thinking this about Punk in 2013. I wanted him in that main event so much, and then I would hear Triple Threat pitch, and I was like, sorry, Punk, mate, I want it just as much as you. And then also, it's The Rock and John Cena too. I get it.
Yeah.
I wish I didn't, but I do. With The Rock here, when this is seemingly converted into this tag match, singles match, night one, night two thing, I was thinking, great. One of the reasons why I love The Rock, as opposed to Triple H in 2003.
Because he's entertaining.
He was the guy that would pop your tits off.
Yeah, he was entertaining.
And then do the job for the Hurricane.
Yeah.
Who then Triple H would pedigree a few weeks later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He would put Goldberg over in Goldberg's debut before Triple H buried him across summer. There was the contrast. It was like, there is a man who is completely secure in his position because he knows how good he is and will do business when it's necessary. And a contrast to Triple H, who does none.
It was so funny, the contrast between Hollywood Rock, actual, I'm in Hollywood and I'm going to make it and I'm just at the peak of my comedic powers. Like, yeah. His Toronto stuff and that manipulation was a million times funnier than the things Wilborn likes about The Rock. Like, hey, you all right?
Yeah.
The chicken nuggets. Did he like the chicken nuggets, Wilborn?
I think he kind of did that, like, guilty laugh. He's like, chicken nuggets over here.
He loves it. The actual to run my mouth all over your candy ass. I mean, that's just absolute magnificence from Dwayne.
His favourite, Wilborn's favourite Rock bit ever is still when the Lakers beat the Kings.
Is it? All right, okay.
But he's laughing halfway through it because he knows the heat he's going to get.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Wilborn.
That was
Rock's... What I'm getting at is that, this is a side rant, and the first of many, or the third of many on this podcast about how much Triple H sucks, is that the one year where Triple H decides to sort of, like, visually take on that 86 flair thing with the big gold belt and the shades and the suits and all the rest of it. And it's like, you're trying to look big time. Look at Dwayne.
Yeah.
He's better than you at everything.
Yeah. It was, well, that contrast and that era of Rock was the last time we had him as a full-timer in any capacity. And it was that era that defined one of his key characteristics over virtually anyone that's ever been at his level, was kind of how selfless he was, how he had that business brain. It was like, because he was so secure in himself, he could come back, he could lose, he could make fun of himself. Even as The Rock, he could mock himself a little bit. The Cena program, you knew ultimately was going to go Cena's way, and it did massive money. So you're like, The Rock was right, his instincts were pretty good. And then this Cody thing happens, and that got thrown away for a week, didn't it? That was, now even The Rock has ascended to that point where all these wrestlers do, where they're so protective over this aura that they've established that, nope, sorry, not anymore. I'm pulling the ladder up. And then in Vegas, he seems to pivot. But, and I think this was so key, I believe The Rock was pivoting for the good of all this. He's in this now. Like, how WWE performs benefits him. And he spotted that and he thought, it's not going to perform as well. I've read The Room. The Rock has continued to read The Room as relates to his wrestling fans. I can't speak to his other interests, which seem to have all gone wrong one after another.
Yes.
But within wrestling, he read The Room. He kept wrestling as his safe space and did the right thing for this WrestleMania build. With one exception that I don't think he could have accounted for, when he was stood next to Roman Reigns, Roman just looked like it was him and John Cena in 2017 all over again. Roman was minimized by that thing. How tonight do they do everything you described, where they've got to appear together?
The killers in the jungle.
There's got to be a little tease that, all right, mate, out of the way, it's my bit now. And Roman Reigns is the one to reduce Rock in size and remind him that it's like, I was going to say it's my yard now because he took that from the dead man. But all joking aside, when this is said and done, I'm still the head of the table. Like, and he has to do that in a very real way because I think it was everybody noticed it. Everybody noticed that. And you can't put all the work into Roman and then, like, just accept that he's minimized by the Rock. You've got to preserve the work of Roman Reigns as this all-conquering, godlike figure. Roman Reigns in the ring often looks as big as that ridiculous augmented reality graphic of him.
Him in a tracksuit is one of the sexiest images.
And then The Rock stands next to him, and he's just Roman.
I think they can do it. If you look at Roman, he was completely auraless for years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of transparently pushed top guy.
Yeah.
He had presence, but he had no one really bought him as the guy. That was the problem.
Could that be the dig? Could Rock say, like, at one point, I held your arm aloft in Philadelphia before?
Yeah, maybe.
We'll do it again at WrestleMania. Maybe, yeah. Like, he wants you to remember that you were nothing in a flak jacket sort of thing.
Ultimately, I'll wait for it. I'll wait for the evidence to reveal itself. I'm not necessarily, like, you know, I'd love any excuse to bury WWE and all the rest of it. But I'm joking. I think Roman Reigns is, he's not The Rock, but no one is. But The Rock, he had a tendency to blow people away he was working with. Sometimes it was a joke who worked alongside him in in the WWF days. It's like, Bulldog working The Rock.
Uh-huh.
Like, Billy Gunn working The Rock. It's like, he made people look like nothing.
Yeah.
But he could, like, Austin and The Rock looked level. Like, at times even that, like a Triple H did. Mm-hmm. Roman has leveled up in terms of his aura and his presence and his ability to convey it. I think he could do one more level up.
Do you think he wants...
I don't think he looked that overshadowed, personally.
I'd love it if there was an element of that in the detail of the build where, like, Roman casually...
It's not the killer and the filler in the jungle. It's the killers in the jungle, and it's such a good name.
You should casually mention at some point.
I feel like Wilborn about this killers in the jungle stuff.
It's great. I love to see this enthusiasm about it.
The name of his new film.
It is.
I hate
it. Oh, God, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Killers in the jungle starring...
Yeah. All right. Starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Joseph Inouye. And then they can just do an adaptation of this cool new WWE thing.
That's it. It'll be seasoning the discourse with the phrasing for when the trailer drops, when you go and see Iron Claw at cinema, you're like, Jesus Christ, all my dreams have come true at the same time. Is that I'd like a detail at some point. Again, it doesn't have to be in this segment, but we're kind of building all of this up because who knows how many segments they'll work. That's going to be a joke that Cody and Seth should tell, that we're never here. Like, we'd welcome them answering us back, but the last time they turned up on Raw was the, you know, like, that should be part of the build, I think. Roman just casually mentioned at some point, whenever The Rock's ready, you can acknowledge me if you want. And, like, the disgust The Rock should briefly, that should flash across The Rock's face for, like, on a business.
Yeah, on a business, then.
Can you imagine The Rock, like, maybe that's what happens when Roman turns on him, like, drags his hand up, puts a finger up, forces his arm up in the air like that, and he's like, Rock's, like, unconscious, and he just makes him do that.
I like that.
Can't decide if you're looking at me with disgust or excitement there.
I kind of drifted. But no, I do like that.
I'm going to bring you right back in, don't worry. Because Killers in the Jungle talk.
It's Miz versus Logan Paul.
It's over there. And now it's Miz versus Logan Paul. Elimination Chamber qualifiers on SmackDown tonight for the men's and women's matches. There have been some changes, which we will get to later on. But yes, let's start with that one. United States champion Logan.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, though, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, we all carry around different stresses. They can be big life worries or just, you know, little things like your favorite wrestler not being used properly. The thing is, when we keep them bottled up, it really can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. It is really helpful too for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. Therapy basically empowers you to be the best version of yourself. So why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and best of all, suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/whatculture today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/whatculture.
Paul takes on his old nemesis, The Miz, a SummerSlam rematch live tonight on SmackDown. There's only one winner here, sure. Well, there's two, because me too. But there's only one winner of the match, and that's United States Champion Logan Paul, right? You're not beating a title holder in an Elimination Chamber qualifier.
So the idea here is that LA Knight is going to find himself in the match. In Elimination Chamber.
Qualified, yeah.
And they're going to tell that story within the Elimination Chamber match.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, they need the star power for this Elimination Chamber show. Mm-hmm. It's weird. Like, you talk about these big successes that WWE has, and they do. Huge ones, realistically. Like, Cody, like Roman continuing to be Roman, Gunther, Rhea Ripley. But you look at what a show looks like without Roman in a stadium, and you're like, ooh, how big are these stars really? Like, how big are these stars really? And maybe you need a Logan Paul in that match.
I think so. It's
and this match is going to be terrible because it involves The Miz. And I can confidently state that because 95% of the time he's been terrible. And if you were, if I'd sit down any reasonable WWE fan / whatever, observer, and I'd say give us 10 great Miz matches and he couldn't do it. Yeah. And he's probably worked about 5,000 because he's been there for about 19 years, 18, 19 years. He could name me more than 10.
No, you couldn't. I'd like to spend half an hour with it.
It's time to play the game!
Name me 10 classic Miz matches. Well, like 10 great. Not pretty good. If you're in it for 18 years and you've been pushed as much as you have been, and you have the attitude that he sometimes has had about the superiority complex. Right.
Yeah.
10 great mismatches. There's no excuse. You've been in it 18 years.
Dolph is the one.
I would say that was great.
That's the one. That's the great one.
That's The Rock.
I really enjoyed...
One of the killers in the jungle.
Am I allowed to count multi-mans and tags that he's in, or has it got to be with singles matches?
Tags? You can have an all-time great tag match. Of course you can.
I really enjoyed...
I mean, he can't, but you can.
Remember when it was 50 guys versus The Shield, and Roman Reigns got injured and couldn't work it, and Kurt Angle was in it, and they put Braun Strowman in a bit.
That's not great.
It was great.
It was fun.
It was really good.
It's not great.
Great would be Ziggler. Great would be... That's not great. What was that?
There was a Seth one on the show after WrestleMania 34, I think. You know, when it was Seth, Balor, Miz.
Yeah.
And then it was Seth, Miz on the pay-per-view after. It was like a four. It was a four.
It was in the four-way with Zayn and Owens. People loved. That was pretty great.
That was great. But singles. That Seth, Miz one was like, it's the Miz effect. It's that Miz / Natalya effect.
Yeah.
Where they do something pretty damn good once in like 5, sometimes even 10 years. And it's like, don't sleep on them. They've been putting us to sleep for 10 years. It's rather easy to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I would say that Miz versus Seth 4.25. If you actually take into account the drama they generated, crowd heat, like how technically good and exciting the action was, I would say you're probably going to think about 80% of Dynamite matches are better.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just because it's The Miz.
I love this. I feel like we're laying out a challenge to the engagement accounts. Thread 10 great Miz matches. Great. And let.
Like, no, because they'll say that he was cooking in, like, when he was a face with Ric Flair.
My God, you've just pinpointed the absolute dirt worst period. And I like The Miz, but that's like a dirt worst period of a bang average career.
Yes.
You just found it straight away. Counter that on X. Thread. I want to see them with the cry laugh emojis. How can they say this rubbish cry laugh emojis? I want the 10 matches.
I don't want you to want to get them involved in my life.
Tag us.
But people love The Miz. Don't bother, man. Don't summon that evil into the world.
So Logan Paul wins.
A pretty bad match. But you know what? The thing about The Miz is that some of these pretty bad matches are loud.
Yeah. That's what I like about The Miz.
He is a bit of a star.
Yeah.
He's got showmanship.
I welcome The Miz either in a storyline I'm into or wrestling other people I'm into. It's really his like interactions that I'm not fussed about, but it tends to be if he's like, if there's other wrestlers that are near him, I might be into them. Which brings me to, Sitch, the other Elimination Chamber qualifier. It's Dominic Mysterio versus Kevin Owens. And why I link those two things together is because obviously Dominic and JD McDonagh have been getting pied off by R-Truth. Got the awesome Truth link. Miz wasn't there for R-Truth when he was getting decked by the Judgment Day on Raw. Could they follow up on that as part of this qualifier? Or is it just kept simple, stupid, and Kevin Owens just beats Dominic with ease?
Because
he wants Logan Paul too. Right now, at least, that's a motivation for him to get in the chamber because he can't get back to Logan Paul after getting screwed.
I guess. They could just continue the storyline on Raw, I suppose. There's plenty of weeks left, and Triple H is never in any hurry.
No, he's not.
If he can delay it a few days and do it on Raw, it's absolutely tits, Dave.
There's one thing you told me, is that like the best cooking takes time.
Not necessarily.
I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with that. 20 minutes for some oven chips is all I want, but you told me that you need to like put meat on for frigging hours.
Depends on what you want.
What's the shortest time it would take for you to cook a great meat? Pick your meat, I don't know.
6 minutes.
What?
5 minutes, 6 minutes.
What meat? What's that?
Like a really good steak.
Ah, because, yeah, of course, because it takes... Would you do that at home? Would you take, like, 5 minutes on a steak?
No, I often do.
I never even thought about it like that. I'm imagining sort of, like, Christmas dinner things where you have to put the meat... Like, I don't know what people do, but they keep it in the oven for ages.
Well, I do, like, a nice... I like a bœuf bourguignon.
Excuse me?
Bœuf bourguignon. Red wine beef.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Frank LeBeuf bourguignon.
Yeah.
What's that then?
Like in terms of cooking, it's basically, it's like...
You pour the wine over the beef and it cooks in it.
After, like, you know, you put your onion and celery and all that kind of, and garlic and stuff like that. But like, the whole point is you take a fatty cut of meat.
Yeah.
And then you gently break down those proteins in it.
On the classic Office episode, Dinner Party, I was always led to believe that when Michael's dipping his beef...
This is why you're an idiot.
...in the red wine was like a disgusting act. Is that... Not, I'm not saying that like wine is a dippy egg for beef here. I'm just saying, do those things actually complement each other? It's just the act of him doing it like that is a little bit gross at the dinner table.
Yes, because you meant to cook it down and develop the flavours.
So there's a science to why you would put the beef with the wine, and if he's doing that.
I think that's a joke, is that he's, yeah.
But it's not that wild. It wouldn't be as wild as say white wine.
No, it's wild, it's wild.
Still wild.
I'm trying to think of like an analogy for you.
I would never do that. I would never have a glass of wine.
Yeah. Well, I like wine.
I don't dislike wine, but it serves no purpose in my life. I don't have a sophisticated palate for it. I don't know what pairs well with something else. I don't drink in the house. So, like, I never... If I'm having alcohol, it's only in a bar, and it feels like a waste of money because I wouldn't appreciate it. It, like, it just doesn't...
I like wine.
I have no need for it.
I like wine with a meal out. Don't really drink it in the house.
Yeah.
I think it's a slippery slope.
Well, it's... Seems easier to get into as an evening drink, doesn't it?
It's like, bang.
There's the bottle gone. Yeah. No, the flavour's like, it's fine. I'd like
everyone I know who drinks wine drinks a lot of wine.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of wine. Like, are you sure you should be drinking that much wine? I know people who drink wine. Fuck, hell, you drink that much wine?
Bottle of nights.
So at least with, like, a cocktail, which I sometimes do a couple of nights a week.
Yeah.
It's like, it takes a little while to prep. You cannot be having, like, a wine amount of cocktail because it's like, gee, I can't be arsed after a while. With... Lager and beer, surely it would just sit on you.
That's it, yeah.
But with wine, the people I know who drink it hammer it.
Yeah, it's just, again, like in the house, like I drink quite a lot of Vimto Zero, so that's like a rosé in a way. And yeah, it's more expensive in pubs than pints, and there's less of it. I'm a quantity guy.
You are a quantity guy.
You can't buy a pint of wine, it would cost you a fortune. You're buying a bottle, basically. Yeah. Like, I want a pint, because there's more.
Well, if you wanted to get a blaster, you
trebles.
Yes.
We used to get gin and vodka from the offie.
He's just a different breed, man. St. Markham's, man, what can I say?
Oh, God. I'd reduce it like that lady. Like a lady from Rada I saw being classist against the North East that pissed everybody off. I don't think she really cares. She just named a like North East city.
Yeah.
Everybody, it's like fueled by the new series of Netflix documentary on Twitter and we're raging about it. Like, I don't think it was a target attack.
You know what?
The dynamic of Kevin Owens and Dominic Mysterio.
Yeah.
I'm not into that.
Mm.
You got someone who's really, really hard, and in this babyface role, just like quite noble and honourable.
Yeah.
Got a good set of values as Kevin Owens. He's got no tolerance. In fact, Kevin Owens has got a lower tolerance for WWE in the stupid way in which it operates than me, and that is his character on television.
Yes.
Time and time again, it's like, why is this happening? Why is this person behaving like that, allowed to behave like that? Why does this keep happening? Why does this trope keep... He hates WWE tropes more than me. And he's got a completely... a lower tolerance for WWE's bollocks than me, right? And who kind of epitomizes that bollocks and is most obnoxious, and you can imagine he's got no time for whatsoever. To great effect, mind you, Dominic Mysterio. I don't think this is going to be that great. I think you could develop something with those two characters, maybe not in this promotion, but on like PLE level where it's like a murder.
Yeah.
And it would be awesome. Like this has to be a murder to work.
Mm.
And you don't see those kinds of like slaughters in a WWE TV match, which is all a pity.
Like if Dominic had picked up a couple of banana skin wins and then Kevin Owens just absolutely decimated him in an old school steam weapons match.
He cannot deal with it. And yeah. He's raging. Absolutely apoplectic.
I don't think, I think Kevin Owens probably wins here. Dominic, so in the other timeline where you were going to get Dominic Mysterio and Brock Lesnar at Elimination Chamber, that theoretically just rules Dominic out of it now. There is a way in which Dominic wins tonight if he is going to win. And this is a little bit of that Triple H thing that I love and you hate, which is that characters have like one little backstage interaction with each other, don't like each other, but then you know that they're maybe not on terms, and then that's there for you to, well, we're going to do this. And then when it actually happens on TV in 3 weeks, you feel like you're really clever and that you've just, like you've sort of solved the puzzle yourself.
There's a little bit. Dom loses all the time.
Yeah.
You might have overthought this.
No, there's a little bit of dissension, a little bit, between Kevin Owens and Legado del Fantasma, the reformed Santos Escobar unit. And for a while, myself and Wilbon on this podcast have been speculating, obviously because Santos and Rey has been the long plan, and Santos was like in kayfabe the reason that Rey Mysterio is out with his knee injury. This could be a nice way to start bringing that together for WrestleMania. Because I think Rey will probably want to put Santos over at WrestleMania if they're having a singles or if they're doing a tag maybe. Santos and Dominic have had a little bit of, deadbeat dead and air, sort of that kind of thing. Yeah. This could be a bit of that. And then
Could act as a bridge.
Dominic sort of squeezes his way into the chamber and Owens is out for revenge. And as part of that, that opens the door for Rey to return. And
I think one of the reasons why I hate WWE so much, well, I don't hate it. Why I don't rate it very much is that I'm coming to this studio. I have a great time with my pals, right? Mm. But you know, I waste a lot of energy and time and words and effort talking about these things, and what ordinarily happens is that I'll see a 2.5 star match in 9 minutes mutilated by an advert break, and then it just ends, and it's 90% certain that that's what's going to happen with this. Oh, by the way, there'll be no crowd heat.
Well,
nothing for me to go, oh, I'm into this. It's weird, everyone's going bonkers. Mm. Love this. So I might have wasted 10 minutes of my life here. That's 10 minutes I could.
Dominic Mysterio helped turn around DIY's fortunes on Raw. The first overmatch they had on Raw was against Dominic and JD McDonough. Proper baddies.
Dominic, 50% of the time, is really effective.
Yeah.
50% of the other time.
The other time.
He is just mechanically poor and it's just a bit boring.
Can we talk about a wrestler that I think you are prepared, right now at least, to wave the flag for a little bit? And especially because our erstwhile colleague Adam Wilbon would like us to spend some time on this. I would. One of the Elimination Chamber qualifiers tonight.
I don't care what he thinks. Well, he's been mugging me off. Wilbon, I disagree. We're doing him favours now, aren't we?
You know those, Nicholas, you know those podcast clips that are like sort of cut for TikTok? And the subtitles go across the bottom, like, Sidgwick on Wilbon. I don't care what he thinks. And then just like cutting Wilbon with a shock face. Like, what's going on over there on the What Culture podcast? Follow us on TikTok. Do a dead man
YouTube face. The same face he's got all his time. Disapproval.
I don't care what you think. Disagree.
Such a miserable bastard.
Alba Fire replacing the injured Shotzi Blackheart. She got injured on NXT, which we've not yet seen and we might not see. Quite honestly, it was on the taped one for next week because some of the NXT crew and Perth for Elimination Chamber. So she's out. Alba Fire is in.
Alba Fire. What's this got to do with Will Bourne?
Is taking on Tiffany Stratton in an Elimination Chamber qualifier. It's a big night for her. We've backed her for a long time on NXT.
I've had to listen to all that endless will she get promoted talk.
Well, she has.
And now she has.
It's happened.
So I don't have to hear it anymore.
She's got the prettiest moonsault ever. She's got a lot of like that sort of offense that is quite dazzling. And I think quite welcome in this division. We've said before, it's always more about the booking than the talent in WWE. There's enough on this roster that you could be doing so much more with. But nonetheless, she's potentially a fantastic division. I think if nothing else, she invites like a bit of an injection of creativity.
Yeah, I guess.
A character like Tiffany Stratton.
I guess it's how much they'll use this character. There's something about SmackDown in particular, and maybe I'm leaning too heavily on the example of Cameron Grimes, where I know just a place where fun NXT goes to die a little bit, SmackDown.
Yeah, I could see that a little bit. We're still waiting for a lot of their, you know, when it used to be the sort of the NXT class of 2014 or 2015, that was defined by just some of the best wrestlers in the world that Triple H had plucked and put them in the system and kept them enough like themselves.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, so, like, Neville is going to fit in WWE. Sami Zayn's going to fit in WWE. Yeah. And then they go to the main roster and they don't. This is a different kind of graduating class, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you've got some interesting wrestlers, but it's as much about what the hell is that character going to look like? Blown up onto the like, pretty deadly, have fared pretty well. They've not had to betray anything.
Yeah.
They're losing a lot, but they've not had to betray anything.
She was Stratton. She got almost in the ring. Didn't get out. I expect vignettes and...
Her and Naomi, it was sexism, is what it was. Like her and Naomi return / debut in the Rumble. Where are they going to sign? We're still on the Bron Breakker. Right, who wants me the most? I'm kicking ass. The women had like a scrappy pull apart in a locker room after Tiffany Stratton came out of a door, having already signed.
Yeah.
And they were just back.
Yeah.
Most normalised thing good.
Now they're just in the mix now. Yeah. I would give a vignette. That character was really over. Very one-dimensional and silly, but like really quite over and, you know, a standout. So Stratton... Who's she wrestling here?
Alba Fire.
Alba Fire.
She would have beaten Shotzi. So
she's going over here, obviously. So she'll go over, that's fine, but will she get over? That's the question.
It's always the question.
I just feel like it's a little bit... I just can see her becoming part of the furniture. Mm. She's not getting that. As you said, she's not getting that. Oh, God. It is imperative that I sign her. No, I'm Nick Aldis. I want to sign her. She's really not getting that. Telling that you're not getting that. Almost in the ring last week.
Chamber's something. Like the Chamber's first PLE, she's like, and she's basically
she
put
could
in
do
the biggest match.
A prettiest moonsault ever off a pod.
Yeah, she could, and probably will, because that's that big moment, isn't it? Where like she's probably not going to win it.
Loads more space now, isn't there?
Yeah, it's actually.
So you're not going to get
fit for purpose of wrestlers wrestling.
It used to be ridiculous, like Van Damme not being able to rotate, so just kneeing Triple H in the throat. Those bumps when they were like crumbling on them because it was so tentative and understandably so.
Yeah.
All in favour of the new chamber. Or, she could do.
7 years old now, that chamber.
She could do a PA. I've lost sense of time.
I know.
I have lost complete sense of time. You know what I was thinking, right? It's just an aside because it's way more interesting to preview than a WWE television match. You know how this, like, I've lost my concept of time and when things happen and how things happened that long ago. It's like, was it that long ago? Is that something that just comes with age? Is that something that has always happened? But, like, I don't...
It's math. There's more years behind you, so your brain's got to, like, box off some of the stuff. It's got to minimise a lot more of the stuff into just, like, smaller memories over that longer period of time. When you're 10, you've only got those 10 years, haven't you? So everything feels so much bigger.
I'm interested in this phenomenon, so if anyone who's, like, you know, good at, like, science... You know, I've got, like, my wife's, like, a doctor.
Your wife's a shoot doctor.
She's a doctor of science, yes.
Not an idiot on a podcast, doctor. She's a real
doctor.
More,
like, chemistry and stuff like that. This is more...
Dabbering.
Physics, philosophy, I guess.
Philosophy. We're not philosophy because there'll be a scientific element about how the brain processes the information.
Yeah. Like. I just want to know, like, but the point I was about to make is, do you think X in the circular discourse has anything to do with this? Where because everything gets repeated and I wasn't. People were talking about whether Kurt Angle's ever had a 5-star match on Twitter all week.
Aye.
And I think I'm losing my mind on it. I need to get rid of it. But I'm thinking, does that, do you think, affect your perception of time, because I'm almost certain, because like 5 years ago, that was deep. That was post Six Stars in the Tokyo Dome, because that was 2017. That's when it really, like, star ratings have always been a bone of contention. That's when it became really massive. January 4th, 2017, mm-hmm. The countdown clock to the end of the world.
Yeah.
Like, for seven years, star ratings, and Kurt Angle never got one, and maybe that's had something to do with it. I mean, just getting philosophical over here.
You're exposed to
SmackDown preview.
You're exposed to new people realizing old things for the first time.
It's the same people talking about the same
stuff.
Well,
that's part of, yeah, I guess so. I do think that access to everything has normalized all of it. There was a time when...
What does that mean?
Well, so when you and I were growing up, and it comes to... I'm only speaking in wrestling terms here, by the way. When you and I were growing up and we would read about certain matches...
Yes.
The mere idea of one day getting to see them was an impossibility unless you're able to track it down from a tape trader or whatever. And I include even some, like, even WWE, the market leader, and they were really good at getting their stuff out.
You love saying that, don't you?
Well, because they lead the market. They were really good at getting their stuff out there, but...
Who said WWE?
You couldn't have had everything.
I know who it is.
You couldn't have had everything, is what I'm saying.
You're talking like one of the writers now.
Hang on, let me finish, right? It was imperative for them, as part of asserting their dominance, the World Wrestling Federation, that was like, right, we're going to get every bit of footage out there. You and I would have had the same fan journey. You watch one show for the first time, and then you kind of work backwards to catch yourself back up to your present day. And I'm assuming most fans had that experience until the dawning of the network and of X and of this current generation
YouTube.
Of
YouTube.
YouTube and fans that can just come in at whatever point and then pick and choose whatever. Their discovery is so different. So I want to believe that when, you know, that whole thing, people just log on and say stuff.
Yes.
Like, I want to believe that more people are earnest than that meme suggests. So when somebody in your mind has just logged on and said stuff because they've just posted out at friggin' no, a John Cena Randy Orton match from 2009, of which we saw 300 of them, and said, man, now that was a finish right there. And it's like a reverse into an RKO.
Yeah.
Or something like that. They've genuinely just discovered it that day, in the same way that we might be exposed to some like 80s All Japan. Like, I genuinely haven't seen that. And oh my God, that's just blown me away.
Yeah.
That's happening now with some of the content that we would consider to be some of the worst in wrestling history.
Yes.
Like, we're about 5 years away from people going back and doing deep dives for the first time on the CWC era of NXT. And going,
I don't.
Guys, we need to talk more about Karrion Kross's first title reign. That's going to happen.
Oh my God, no, it happened.
And they're going to mean it. No, I saw that. They think it was like a pull apart. Bron Breakker. That was more of a, here they were as security guards.
Yeah, yeah.
At some point, that's going to be earnestly appraised. It's like, things they were doing in that pandemic, man. Oh my God. Because somebody's going to find it for the first time.
But people keep doing the, well, it's now become something you don't do because too many people did it and then got the piss taken out of it. But I watched WWE television in 2008. Yes, that roster was stacked. But the television was so bad.
Yeah.
I still get, whenever I see a clip and it's got that silver WWE HD logo in the top left.
WWE Live too far into the corner because of the way they, like the...
Yeah, and it's the WWE HD. That silver thing. Oh, God, I know it's the worst. I know I'm about to watch the worst crap I've ever seen in my life when I see that.
They like strapping. It's all you've got.
Yeah. Is that the end?
Just about. We've got Naomi versus Zelina Vega. Which way could that go? Who is this? Tony Khan? Booking this SmackDown?
No, because there's two women's matches on it.
We both burned him. Imagine that. On a SmackDown preview. Imagine that. Naomi's
like collision. He's done it for 3 weeks now. Naomi, like Zelina Vega, how many times do we have to go through this? What a personality she has.
Mm-hmm.
She's, I hate the word because I'm 38 and I'm British. She is a savage on social media. And when she, remember when she used to do the watch-alongs?
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like absolutely ripping the piss out of her. She's amazing.
Yep.
She's not a great wrestler.
No.
And so this will not be a good wrestling match.
And again, I've made this point with a number of different wrestlers.
And it's, Naomi's going to win.
Naomi's going to win. Obvious winner, obvious loser. Like, Zelina Vega in particular is one that I feel a bit sorry for, that the system exists the way it does. Because, and this, like, applies to male and females. We've got it currently, I would say, with, like, Robert Stone a little bit. Where are my manners? With
Robert Stone.
Like, we highlighted a couple of things in our NXT review, which is still available to see if you on whatculture.com's YouTube channel, of how he's kind of quite a fun manager of Von Wagner.
He's the best.
It's not necessary that he get in there and wrestle all that often. There are people that are managers and valets and all, there are roles. She was unbelievable. As
she was great. Like the that Hurricane Rana.
Yeah, like the
that Hurricane Rana on Gargano.
The perfect example of when rather than...
Yeah, exactly. She'll never... Well, maybe it'll all come together for her in the ring. For a while, at least, she will never do anything, even if it looks better technically than that.
And...
Then the timing of when to do that and her role in creating the drama of that match.
And I would say backlash against Rhea Ripley. Didn't matter that she was going to win or lose. It was the fact that she was getting the shot that night in front of a crowd that desperately wanted her to win. And it was a night that she could be perceived as like a main eventer. There are absolutely like times and places for different wrestlers to shine in different spots. But then it's really hard after the fact to just slot into the roster and be expected to be taken as a winner. She never enters a Royal Rumble and she goes to the trouble of making like incredible gear for it. Never enters a Royal Rumble and I'm sat there thinking, it's Zelina Vega's year.
Yeah, I know.
It's not to be, is it? And she loses here to Naomi.
Yeah, gosh,
Naomi
gets
in the chamber and all that sort of stuff.
That's the end.
And that's our lot. I know. But you see, Sage, you've got these Elimination Chamber qualifiers, male and female. You've got this possible Legado Fantasma thing.
Yeah.
You've got the Killers in the Jungle.
I love the Killers in the Jungle, man.
This has been the SmackDown preview where you've got all this and so much more. Having that.
It's good.
It's not bad.
I mean, it's total Alistair Green pill. Follow him on Twitter to find out where he steals his crack from.
Yeah, completely 100% stolen part from Alistair Green. He's really good at it as well, isn't he?
He's class.
And if you want to follow us on X, you can do so at WhatCultureWDB. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at...
M. Sidgwick. M. Sidgwick. I want the followers.
You can follow me at... Michael Hamlet. You can follow our brilliant producer, Adam Nicholas, at It's Adam Nicholas. There's nothing else on the feed today other than the news, so check out that if you want to. We'll be back on Monday for a review of SmackDown because Wilbon's still off, so you get to be on that as well. You can talk about the Killers in the Jungle, whatever they get.
Yes.
On. Yeah?
Yeah.
And until next time, we will see you soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.